Hi everybody, good evening and welcome to a somewhat unscheduled Wednesday live show, but for reasons that will become apparent, there's been certain developments north of the border that I wanted to chat about, and we're going to have a great guest on to hopefully sort out all the unbelievable stuff taking place in Scotland. So we've got to get that done. Just also a quick heads up, there won't be a live podcast tomorrow night because I'm away. That's why there won't be one. So I've filled, in a sense, this is filling the space. And then the last thing to say to you guys is don't forget, if you haven't already done so, make sure you sign up to my Substack. I am watching, so you need to make sure you do that. Right, listen, as always, this podcast, this show is brought to you by our good friends at Quantum Hypno. And if we can just play the, I think we play the ad if we have it. You know, without the support of the likes of people like Quantum Hypno, none of this is possible. Those of us in the alternative media, the independent media, perhaps more precisely, we do need to have support each other, which is why I'm very keen that, you know, we don't fall out amongst each other, and we basically do what's necessary to keep all of our different activities going. So if we have the ad, can we play the ad?
Hi, I'm Sarah Jane Smith. Find your path by doing my new Millionaire's Mindset Hypnosis. I help you to break any subconscious thought patterns that are stopping you from obtaining all of your goals. The truth will then come to the forefront of your mind that you are worthy and deserving of achieving everything. You'll start to attract the right people into your life. Opportunities will open up as a result. Financial success is a natural outcome from being clear and focused. Everything will literally fall into place when you do what you love. People are already enjoying mind-blowing success with this incredible session. So what are you waiting for?
There you go, Quantum Hypno. Do check them out. And I believe Sarah's currently in Japan, actually. So I think you'll see a new ad coming along in due course. Anyway, that being said, listen, we've got about 55 minutes to put the world to right. And in terms of putting the world to right, I think we have to start with Scotland, which desperately, desperately needs put to right. And who better can I think to do that with a friend of the show. He's been on before. You all loved him when he was on previously. He's back again. And of course, it's David Scott. Welcome, David.
It's delightful to be back, David. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, do you know something, David? As we record this, it's an absolutely miserable, wet evening outside. It's I don't know what's causing it, but, you know, I used to think geoengineering was just not sure about. I'm not sure about anything anymore. But it's miserable. It's miserable and bleak. I can't think of a better way to spend Wednesday night chatting to yourself. And again, David, thanks so much for being here. Now look, honestly, this stuff writes itself. You know, I don't need to have a big list of stuff to talk about because you live in Scotland. And Scotland never fails to disappoint me in terms of the shenanigans going on with our Humza Yousaf and the SNP, which is just absolute clown world. Now, since we spoke last, this is a big thing. 1st of April, and you couldn't make it up, 1st of April, the new Hate Crime Law Act, or whatever they call it, it's come in, and I mean, I don't even know where to start. It's like I see Scotland as a place, a centre of the Enlightenment, which is great scope in Scotland for people holding different views and arguing back and forth and all that, as it should be. But I think we're moving from the Enlightenment to the reverse of that under SNP. What do you make of this legislation that's come in, David, for starters?
Yes, April the 1st was the first day, and I had the pleasure of joining about somewhere between 500 and 1,000 fellow Scots outside Holyrood Parliament for a funeral service. And the funeral service was to say farewell to free speech in Scotland. Mm-hmm. So we had speeches. So that's actually on my Substack, Scotland's Hate Crime Law. So I said a few words about it there on the day it came in. In the animated film Chicken Run, at one point the American chicken describes the place he comes from as the land of the free and the home of the brave, and the Scottish chicken misunderstands and shouts out Scotland, right? And that's the wrong answer. Now, the reason that works is that's the idea that Scots have about Scotland and about themselves. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the reason it's funny is it's not quite true. Even then, it wasn't quite true. That's why the joke worked. It's Scotland the brave, but sometimes really not. Mm-hmm. So here we have this very oppressive legislation that's unknowable. I mean, no one can actually know what a crime is anymore. Yeah. I mean, back in the day, there used to be a principle that the law had to be knowable, had to be predictable. You had to know before you committed a crime whether you were going to commit a crime, because otherwise the law wasn't fit for purpose. We don't have that anymore. What we've got is this unknowable mishmash. We'll come to the details of what's in there just shortly. But the core is it's about control. It's about social control. It's about speech control. And it's about ultimately thought control. Because if you can't say something, if you can't express yourself, if you can't develop an idea for fear of being reported to the police, and that is what is happening, then you cannot think. They had something like 8,000. Police Scotland the first week had 8,000 reports. Of hate crimes. So everyone calling everyone else a hate criminal. And of course, this is being used by one political faction or one religious faction or one, whatever, name your faction. Mm-hmm. These days, gender faction. Against another to try and silence them. They don't want to win the argument. We don't do that anymore, not in Enlightenment Edinburgh. No, we phone the police and we get them to arrest and, if necessary, beat up the miscreant. And there's a certain element of this which is harking back to pre-Enlightenment days, or not long before the Enlightenment. We were hanging a young man called Aikenhead for blasphemy in Edinburgh, and there's elements of that about it. Now, it's not any version or corruption of Christianity now. We're talking about the new woke religion, and we can discuss what that's really about. But that's what it is. It's the enforcement arm of the state being used to suppress dissidents, suppress dissident ideas, and enforce the new religion. And the new religion, the new belief structure, the politicians describe in vague terms. They talk about our values, our shared values. And by this, they mean the new woke ideology. And if you do not share it, then you become, by definition, a bigot or far right or words like this, and you deserve to be shunned by all of society. Mm. And if you endorse it and accept it, then you're allowed into society and you're given the pass mark. But the point at which that pass mark is delivered keeps moving, and you have to keep moving with it. Mm. This is how they seek to change, using the law, using the police as enforcement arm, to change the society. So the politicians are not representing the people. No, the politicians are correcting the people, because the people are not good enough. We're not good enough for the leaders. This is the sort of things we're talking about.
Yeah, which really is shocking. And as you said, I did see a figure of about, I think it was 7,000 or 8,000 complaints. And I saw a chart, David, and it was given like hate crimes, 7,000 or 8,000. Ordinary crimes, you know, they were infinitesimally small. And you think to yourself, how can any police system cope with that?
Well, it can't. I mean, this is one of the ironies, right? Because the irony is, Police Scotland numbers are falling because the SNP are not very good managers of money, finances. And although it's got a very generous settlement inside the UK, they've still found ways to waste a lot of money. Yeah. Ferries would be one example. And end up not having enough. So we're cutting down numbers of police officers. Police morale is not very good. The police did not have a good COVID. They have problems. So they announced just recently that in the interest of efficiency, you understand, David, they're not going to investigate all crimes anymore. If the crime's not that serious and we've not really got someone captured on CCTV, so there's not much investigation to do, we're basically going to leave it, right? Yeah. And this is being advertised as efficiency. It's been trialed already in Aberdeenshire, and basically they're not any longer investigating all crimes, but they are investigating all hate crimes. They have said that they'll investigate all hate crimes.
That's right.
And the numbers are huge. And, well, what's a hate crime? I'm convinced, I want to come to this as we go through this discussion, I'm convinced that Police Scotland do not know what a hate crime is and wouldn't know a hate crime if one bit them on the backside. Because this is the world of ideas. And bless their hearts, I'm sure there are very many good men and women in Police Scotland, but it's not a philosophy class. Right? It's not a political economy class. It's not dealing with cultural Marxism. It's stopping people beating one another up in the pub on a Friday night.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's stopping quite a lot of things that need stopping, right? Including domestic violence and all sorts of other violence. And I'm not saying they don't do a good job. This isn't their job. Policing how people think is not their job. And they are totally unequipped to do this.
Well, you're right. And in fact, actually, I'm just going to bring, there is one example that, David, you see, I disagree. I don't think there's such a thing. I don't believe in hate crime. There's no such thing as hate crime. There is crime. There is no hate crime. So it's an oxymoron, except that it's not now in Scotland. And there was an example of something that came along which Police Scotland did respond to. I'm going to bring it up and share it with you, David, if we can just... So someone who I believe is a relative of an SNP minister posted this on their Facebook page in Scotland, obviously. And obviously you can see, it's offensive, of course it is, but I'm of the school of thought that says, well, people just have to grow up and cope with it. But what Police Scotland said, David, and this is what stunned me, it was one of the reasons I reached out to you. Police Scotland said, this doesn't qualify as a hate crime. Why is that? Well, because you would need to be off, if they asked the lady who registered the complaint, was she Jewish? And she said, no, I'm not. So they said, we can't pursue it then. So David, I mean, where do you even start with that? They're completely out of their depth.
They're totally out of their depth, but it's worse and it's more instructive than that, right? So firstly, Nazism equals Zionism, right? That's a point of view. It's a political statement. I get where that comes from. Mm-hmm. I don't happen to agree with it myself. Mm-hmm. I'd be quite happy to debate someone on that subject of what the similarities and differences are and why I don't believe that's an accurate statement.
Yeah.
Fine. I do not think anyone should be locked up for believing something that I think is wrong. Right?
Yeah.
I don't think that's where the line is.
Yep.
I don't think they should be locked up for believing something I think is wrong and I find personally or morally or psychologically or physically, or, in any way offensive. That's not where the line is. Right? Because that way you're using the state to enforce thought control. Now, firstly, the police were entirely wrong when they turned around and said to the woman that whether or not she was Jewish had any effect on the matter. Because the law says that if that goes out and somebody sees it, whether it's directed at that person or not, whether that person is affected by it or not, If anybody sees it, they can report it as a hate crime. So firstly, you've got Police Scotland not knowing or not following the law, the Act. Okay, point number one. Point number two, the tweet was from the father of a Scottish government minister. Right? Rule number one of the total state is it's not what you know, it's who you know. When I was on the road with the Not a Name Person campaign, I met a chap who'd spent a lot of time in Scotland, but he was originally born in Spain, and he's born in Spain under Franco. And he was looking at the name person legislation. He said, this is fascism. I know this is fascism because I grew up under fascism. So let me explain to you what fascism is. Under the fascist system, most people are fine. Right? The state doesn't come after them. There's no particular problem. It's not any worse than anywhere else. You're fine. If you cross the wrong person, the politically connected wrong person, if you have maybe some property that they want, or maybe a wife that they want, or anything that they want, and you're in the way, woe betide you.
Yeah.
Your life is basically over. That's the fascist system. The fascist system is taking all the power of the state and personalizing it to those who have control. So the fact that they decided not to do anything because it was the father of a government minister was point number two. Point number three was this then got to the press. Not often I say this, but God bless them. And it went on the internet. And there was a huge backlash.
Yeah.
Then Police Scotland were now looking at this. So they changed their policy depending on the public backlash, which is a politically led decision.
Yeah.
So this illustrates everything you need to know that's toxic and evil about this law. So the actual chap himself was an SNP member. He's now resigned from the party. Mm-hmm. And has been disavowed by his own son. That must make the next, you know, birthday party or
Christmas. Oh, they eat their own, David. They eat their own. Oh, they do.
But it illustrates beautifully why Police Scotland are totally incapable of administering this law. And let me give you another one. This one actually predates the law, but it was prosecuted. Shouldn't have been, but was prosecuted. But it was then used by Police Scotland in their in-house training for this law. So this is a case they're using to teach their officers how to deal with this law. So Patrick Harvey, who is the leader of the Green Party, who are very radical, far-left, neo-Marxist party, and is bisexual, was being interviewed in the street. And someone walked past and said, basically, vote any colour, not green. Right? And then they said to Patrick Harvey, Mr. Harvey, you're a deviant. And Mr. Harvey turned around and said to the man, you're a bigot. Okay? So the political discourse in Scotland in a 10-second soundbite, that's basically all you need to know.
Yeah.
Now, it should have been where it ended, but Patrick Harvey got Police Scotland to track this guy down. Right, I have a problem with that because that's a political operative, a politically powerful man who's part of the government was offended and used Police Scotland to get the guy, get him done. I have a big problem with that. So Police Scotland dutifully tracked the guy down and he was tried and convicted of something. So he's got some sort of criminal record now, which he does not deserve. Now, let me explain why he doesn't deserve it. Patrick Harvey, I checked, describes himself as queer. He talks about himself as being queer. That's a word he uses to describe Patrick Harvey. Queer is a synonym of deviant. So Police Scotland are now policing synonyms. Now, I don't know if they're going to provide a dictionary of words we can and can't use. I suspect not. Now, what queer means, right, as an ideology, as a belief system, as a political movement, is a constant rejection of the normal, a constant rejection of the status quo. Anything that's solid or firm or status quo or generally accepted queer ideology rejects, right? So, for example, queer ideology is very hostile towards lesbians. It's very hostile towards gay men who are only interested in men because they're not queer enough, right? So this is not, not about whether homosexuals are being mistreated. This is not what it's about. But in the Police Scotland training literature, which used this example, it was about a slur because Patrick Harvey was gay. That's nothing to do with it. So Police Scotland do not know what the words mean that they are being asked to police. They don't know. I would bet that 9 out of 10 or probably more members of the Crown Office and Procurator Fiscal Service, who are institutionally corrupt, don't know either. But they're led by someone who's in the Scottish Cabinet, so that'll be okay. And the judges won't know either. So what we have here is a situation where people are going to get convicted, as that man was, wrongly, for saying the wrong thing to powerful people.
Yeah, and you see, but I wonder how they got the conviction. I wonder what level did that have to pass to be able to get to the point where he could be given a sentence? Because I don't see anything wrong in what he said at all. But presumably,
but this is Scotland. I see. You're confusing us with a free country. There was a wonderful another quote from a film called The Beiderbecke Affair, which was set in Yorkshire. And this big Yorkshireman called Big Al was in the police station having been arrested. And he said, "I'm going to walk out here like a free man. You see, I do impressions. I feel his pain now, right? I get what that means." So the whole thrust of this is in social control. The police have been asked to police things they don't understand. And how do you get someone convicted? It's very simple, right? This is how it works in Scotland, right? The police respond to a political request from Patrick Harvey to get the guy done. They lift him. The Crown Office, which is also a politicised organisation, headed by someone who's on the same cabinet as Patrick Harvey, are the people who decide whether the prosecution goes forward. The prosecution goes forward to a single judge, which they can pick. So it'll be a friend, quite possibly via selected for the job if they think it's sensitive enough. And the single judge can give you up to a year in jail in Scotland. There's no jury.
No jury.
On a summary trial, right? Yeah. Anything more than a year, there has to be a jury, which is a different thing altogether, because once there's a jury, you've got some chance of justice. But when it comes down to it, basically anyone in Scotland can be blocked up for a year as a means of social control. And when they're then released, they will be given some sort of non-harassment order, some sort of order restricting their liberty compared to where they were before they were arrested. And they will never be really free again.
And that's
unfortunately the situation.
Do you know, it's staggering, really, David, when you lay it out like that. And in actual fact, I believe today, over in the Irish Republic, my friend Gemma O'Doherty was also arrested by the police. And she's being brought in front of a single judge. This is the game that they play. It's juries are so passe, aren't they? Forget about juries. Just get a single judge and make sure you control the judiciary and you get your result. I mean, in a way, actually, Ireland and Scotland are, funnily enough, similar-ish in some of this. But I mean, you said this before. I remember you saying this before. And I mean, I thought it's such a strong point. It needs sort of just a reminder. Scotland's not a very big country. You don't need to capture a whole load of people to be able to exercise more or less complete control. If you get certain key offices, and that's almost become the downfall of Scotland, because those offices have been captured, those individuals have been captured. So look out.
Yes, I mean, we've talked about that Mao had the long march through the institutions, or Maoist ideology. Antonio Gramsci had the long march. Mao had the long march. Antonio Gramsci, inspired by Mao, had the long march through the institutions. Well, in Scotland, it's a short march through the institutions.
Because
it's a small country, and if you've got the Chief Constable, the Lord Advocate, the Solicitor General, the head of the Scottish Legal Aid Board, the head of one or two overseeing organisations, and the head of the legal profession, and maybe the Lord President, head of the judiciary. You know, you see, you end up with a list of about seven or eight people, and if you got those seven or eight people on side, you can do almost anything, Scott.
So do you think then that this legislation that's been put on the statute book, do you see that then continuing? And are we just living through the early phase of it, really? You know, because I think I heard Humza Yousaf or someone saying, oh, yeah, it's been a great success because we've already identified, I heard about two or three hundred real hate crime examples that I thought I'd read this or heard this. Yes, it had 8,000 people. I mean, I reported, I have to say, in a moment of madness, I did report Humza himself to Police Scotland. I reported the other clown that leads the Labour Party, Anas Sora. I reported them both for being racist, which they self-evidently are.
If I did just say a few words about this, right? You weren't the only one. Most reported person, the most reported incident amongst those 8,000 reports the first week was Humza Yousaf and his infamous white speech. And for those who have not seen it, it's all over the internet. Most people have seen it, but please, if you haven't, go and look it up. Humza repeatedly goes to all the people that he meets in his working life that are white. Yeah. He spits the word white over and over and over.
Yeah,
and it's been extensively mocked. We've now got, I mean, his brother-in-law has been arrested on a drugs charge, and
I think
and somebody ended up falling out of a window.
Yeah,
and he's been arrested on that as well. So the van that took you. So you got a picture of Humza Yousaf in front of a prison van, you know, and it says the van that took my brother-in-law to prison, white. You know, and it goes on, and people have mocked it, you know, like you know, white Putin servers, white, lucky white hair, white. So, but he went on and on and on about this. It was very extensively mocked. It wasn't even original because he copied it off of Anas Sawa, the head of the Labour Party in Scotland.
Yes.
So,
yes.
As if we even have a choice. Now, so... Week one of his new hate crime law, Humza is the most reported person for hate crime.
Yeah.
Now, you would think that some part of any normal human being would be a little chastened by this, but not Humza.
No.
So he went live and he said that I've not seen anyone who had any sort of problem with my speech who isn't far right. Okay. So, and here again, illustrating the problem. Okay. So if you do not agree that spitting the word white over and over and over again as a means of denigrating the organizations that run the nation, which is 94.5% white.
Okay.
And back 30, 40 years ago, when the people who are now in senior positions were being born, was 99% white. So it's hardly a surprise.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
But this was the argument that Humza was making, is that this illustrates that Scotland is institutionally racist. He says, as a Pakistani first minister with an ethnically Pakistani leader of the Labour Party, apparently this shows that we're irretrievably racist. And that was his point. People objected to that because the white people he was calling out are called Scots, and a lot of people felt that this was not very nice. Though if you object to this, you're now far right, right? So you are now so he can label you any way he likes. He can call you any name he likes because he's in a powerful position.
Mm.
Right? If you call him a name that he doesn't like, then Police Scotland come to your door to intimidate you and quite possibly arrest you. And if you resist, right, use sufficient force, or maybe more than sufficient force, to stop you resisting. That's the nature of it, right? We're talking about using the power of the state. The power of the state is the legal monopoly on the use of violence.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And we're using it now to police words, to police synonyms, to police the choice of ideas that you think have value or validity. And it's profoundly wrong-headed.
Yeah, yeah. As I say, it sort of shocks me that Scotland's been the first part of the UK to go down this slippery road. But down that slippery road, you have started to go. And I just think to myself, David, well, of course, the only thing that could trip them up, but it won't really, the general election is going to bring change in Scotland, I think. But I don't know that it'll make any difference, because if you replace the SNP with Labour, I see them being just as bad. I saw a story today. I don't know if you saw it, David. It was at Glasgow. A Glaswegian councillor was suspended from the Labour Party because she brought up the fact that in some South Glaswegian schools, white teachers and pupils had endured racism or such like. And apparently that's just to say that. You know, being white in Glasgow is apparently a crime as well. I mean, it's almost like Scotland isn't even it's behaving like it's not a white country, but it is a white country.
Yeah. So let me unpack that a little bit, because that's really interesting, that particular case, right? Why did they do that? Why did they suspend the person? Okay. Now, I don't know the ins and outs. And I will be trying to reach out to this person so we can get an interview, because I think it's a very interesting thing that's happened here.
Yeah.
Here's why I think it is, right? If you think that this is some sort of political worldview, I don't think that's really you're grasping it. Right? You have to understand that you're dealing here with the religion. Okay. It's the religion that's fundamentally is opposed to Christianity. Right? It has
I agree.
It has an ambiguous relationship with Islam. It had an ambiguous relationship with Judaism, not anymore. It's pretty anti-Jewish now, unless the Jews are anti-Israel, in which case they get a bye. So there's a strange thing happening there as well. But it's fundamentally opposed to Christianity, right? Point number one. So you've got to understand the tenets of the religion. And what it's doing is it's enforcing blasphemy control to say that white pupils and white teachers in some parts of the south side of Glasgow are experiencing racism is, in their view, blasphemous against their new religion, because their religion states that racism is related to power, and that white people by definition have power, and therefore people who are non-white by definition cannot be racist. This is analogous to the concept of anti-racist. They say we've all got to be anti-racist, and you think that means being against racism, but no, it's not what it means. Being anti-racist means discriminating based on race in a way that increases equity. Right? Yes. So being anti-racist is to be explicitly racist against white people. That's what being anti-racist is. So this is the canon that they are defending. This is the belief system that they're defending. That Labour councillor, by using, you know, the English language and a bit of God-given intelligence, was blaspheming against the new God, blaspheming against the new religion, and therefore must be disciplined. That's what I think has happened.
Right, isn't it? Yeah. But as you say, I mean, that was Labour. This wasn't the SNP. This was Labour.
That's the alternative.
That's the alternative. Yeah, the alternative. Here comes the new boss, same as the old boss. Maybe even worse for all I know. Can I ask, just again, on that specific story, what would your sort of understanding of be if those schools, David, in sort of that southern south part of Glasgow? I mean, what would the ethnic mix be? Why would white teachers and white pupils be exposed to such? What goes on in those kind of schools in that area?
Well, I'm not close enough to that part of Glasgow now, and of course it's changed very rapidly in a very short space of time. But there are certainly relatively small parts of Glasgow where you'll go in and you'll be a minority as a white face. So I would imagine that's all the more so evident in the schooling system. So the fact that it's that white faces would be a small minority doesn't surprise me. And the fact that this ends up with racist bullying doesn't surprise me. I wouldn't be able to give you too much more on just what the ethnic mix is, partly because it's changing so quickly.
Yeah. Okay. Here's another one. And although, in a way, the question I'm asking is it's self-answering really. Whenever this legislation came out, I thought to myself, in one moment, I thought, oh, well, that's going to make the Edinburgh Fringe a bit of a challenge. But then, then I thought for about another millisecond and I thought, no, not really at all, is it? I mean, because comedians would be in the crossfire. Playwrights could be in the crossfire. Yeah. I assume musicians, anyone could be in the crossfire of this legislation. And the Edinburgh Fringe, which by definition you would think would be attacking the establishment, but it's not anymore, is it?
No, it's not. If you go to this occasional speakeasy comedy club, they will. And I caught it's on the internet. You can if you Google it, I'm sure you can find it. There was one where the hate monster. I should explain.
Hate monster. Yeah.
Police Scotland decided to explain the new law to the people of Scotland in the most patronising way possible, as though they were about 7 years old. Now, this is not the first time Police Scotland have done this. This is about the fourth anti-hate campaign that Police Scotland have run. If you want a really good laugh and you can have the patience to chase this back through the years, because it goes back to about, 2007 or so, you can see each iteration of the anti-haters campaign that Police Scotland have run, and they've all been a car crash, and they've all opened up Police Scotland, the Scottish Government, and indeed the Scottish nation to worldwide derision and laughter, right? That everyone has been a disaster. So all the previous disasters, they learned nothing from because Police Scotland. So they decided to have a cartoon character called the Hate Monster to explain to Scotland and Scots not to hate one another. So this was greeted with such derision that they've quietly kind of retired the hate monster, but it's too late because there's now hate monsters turning up at free speech rallies in Scotland, people dressed in big hairy red suits. And one was on the comedy stage. The hate monster came and explained to the crowd that if you hear a joke during this evening's event and you think the joke is funny, before you laugh, you have to ask yourself whether any minority might have been offended by the joke. And so they went through the sort of three, of what the background of the, what had the comedian ever done anything problematic? So it went through those three questions you had to ask. And if the answer to any of these is yes, don't laugh. So the hate monster then got quite angry. It was going through all the things that people say they hate, and the hate monster's getting angrier and angrier and more shouty. And then the hate monster kind of breaks down and says, I'm so full of hate, and I'm the hate monster. It's hate inside the hate monster. I'm a Russian doll of hatred. So the hate monster has been widely mocked, and a few brave comedians will mock this. But of course, the issue is that somebody somewhere will say something that offends the wrong guy and you'll still get it in the neck. Now, again, Scotland's done this before. We had the case of Count Dankure.
Yep, I remember. Right? Yep.
Right, so Count Dankure made a joke, and it was a joke, right, where his girlfriend, now his wife, but his then girlfriend, had a little dog that she adored, and he thought it'd be funny to take this little adorable thing that she thought was so cute and teach it to be a Nazi. So he trained it to do basically a Sikh house salute in response to certain words. Okay, now this was deemed to be grossly offensive by the Scottish legal profession, and he was ultimately fined. He refused to pay the fine, but they just took it out of his bank account anyway. So you can't even. He was willing to go to jail for free speech, but they wouldn't even give him that. And now, in that trial, this was clearly a joke. You can think it was a funny joke. You can think it was an offensive joke, but it's clearly a joke. This was not him recruiting for the Nazi party.
No.
Okay? Obviously. It was not him trying to make Jewish people feel fear and alarm. That was clearly not what was happening. Nobody who is not insane or politically motivated, and if there's a difference between those, those two, please explain. No one who could look at that reasonably could conclude otherwise. But the single judge that he was before in the Airdrie Sheriff Court, middle of Scotland, he decided on the context. He decided on the motivation in that man's head, even though the judge's decision was completely illogical. But it was utterly unreasonable. That was the decision. And therefore, you're convicted. So the whole idea that this will somehow be administered in a way that will be in any way fair and reasonable is nonsense. And it will be used against comedians because it already has. The same mindset's been used against comedians.
Yeah.
And it will be used. Now, I give you another example from Police Scotland's training. They talked about an author called Joe, right? And this was clearly JK.
JK, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it described what she'd done about criticising the trans lobby, all of which was accurate. And then they equated some outrageous statement that JK Rowling's never said to fictional Joe, and used this as training material. So they're already using JK as an author as a target of their training, as to how they're training officers for administering this law. So it's clearly going to come after the arts as well. That they won't escape.
But JK has been very prominent initially in this first couple of weeks in standing right up to the the new legislation.
She's been magnificent. Yeah.
She's been superb, David. I was such admiration for her. And I think she's also said that any other women, now I noticed there was any other women who find themselves in trouble, she will support them. Although I'd be worried about, well, what about men as well? I mean, is it just, but I wondered, do you think they've just tactically decided, look, there's no point in going after the billionaire JK Rowling initially. We'll wait her moment and then we'll get her. What do you think?
Well, they'll wait the moment and they'll get somebody, right? One of the points I was making in my speech is no one knows who'll be first. No one knows what order they'll go for even. No one knows whether it'll even be used very much the first couple of years. It might sit and just sit on the shelves and not really be used. Or used on the most egregious cases where the public would dive into support. And then there'll be some event, suppose they wanted to suggest that we all had to get forcibly jabbed for some disease that's actually no threat, right? Or some other...
That would never happen.
You know, something else, and they want to enforce something. And people are mocking the something they're wanting to enforce.
Yeah,
that can be a hate crime, right? So it will be used at some point. As long as this is on the statutes, it's a threat. A couple of things, just I don't want to get into too much of the weeds of the law, but a couple of things that your audience might like to be aware of. Firstly, the reason that JK is talking about women is women are not protected.
That's right.
Sex is not a protected characteristic. So the protected characteristics are race, age, disability, sexual orientation, but not sex, trans identity, special mention, and variations in sex characteristics. Not quite sure what that actually gets to, but anyway, those are protected. Sex is not. So this doesn't, you can be as misogynistic as you like, you don't fall under any problem with this act. That's odd. You might be interested to know also the act used to be worse, the initial draft, as well as all the things that are in the current version that's on the statute books, included holding material that would do any of these things. And that could include the Holy Bible, because of what it says about homosexuality. So that was actually dropped. So it could have been even worse. So that's one point. So women aren't protected. Another point, in England and Wales, these are always public order offences.
Yes.
Like, they're always couched in terms of public order offences. It does not say in the Act anywhere that this is limited to what you do in the public space. So in your own home, having a private conversation, you can still breach the Hate Crime Act. Now, there was a man in Scotland, who campaigns against these things, and he's called Deke Jackson. And I think he's a beautiful human being. And partly the reason I think this is he stood against Hamza in an election on a free speech, when this act was first becoming a bill, on a free speech ticket. And him and his election agent turned up dressed as Hitler and Mussolini. to the count where Hamza was, right? And they were giving Roman salutes, but they'd drawn a love heart in their hand, and they were claiming this was a love salute. So he got to confront Hamza. Now, it was a very interesting exchange, because Hamza was very aggressive. Now, here you've got a guy, your senior government minister, against someone who's just got standing with no chance, just to make a point about free speech, who's got no chance. Hamza was very aggressive and nasty to him. It was an unpleasant sight to behold. And Hamza spitting rage at him and saying, when Deke's saying, you know, this is going to infringe on freedom of speech in my own home. And he's going, well, do you want to be racist in your own home? Do you want to be homophobic in your own home? Why would you want to do this? It's this kind of very aggressive style of questioning. And this is again, people who object to curtailment of the free speech are immediately called bigots, racists, homophobes, all the leftist woke slur words, all of which mean one thing. You have no right to be hurt. You are subhuman. You have no right to any rights. Mm. You have no right to be heard. You must be quiet and just hope we leave you alone. This is what it's all about. So the own home part, it's not a public order offence. It's an offence anywhere. Internet, anywhere, under any circumstances, you could be breaching the Hate Crime Act. And the third thing, in terms of the detail of the Act, I think you should be aware of, is there's a split, right? Because the requirements for race and the requirements for age, disability, sexual orientation, trans identity and variation in sex characteristics are not the same. Race is more severely dealt with, because under race, it's a crime if you're threatening, abusive or insulting. On the rest of them, it's threatening and abusive. Now, threatening and abusive isn't a very good legal definition anyway, but insulting, right? Who's to say what that is? Now, European Convention on Human Rights Article 10 protects free speech, including the right to offend, shock or disturb. So on the one hand, we've got the right to offend, shock and disturb someone regarding the subject of race. On the other hand, it's an offence, potentially 7 years in jail, to be insulting regarding race in Scotland. Again, what is anyone meant to think? Well, what they meant to think is, if I toe the line, if I only speak the woke religion, if I do not think for myself, if I do not say anything challenging, if I do not give voice to the doubts that I'm having about the current policy and the current direction of our society, if I shut up, they'll leave me alone. Now, of course, the unfortunate answer to that is no, they won't. They'll come for you anyway. So this is what Bonhoeffer said in Germany, right? Yep. You know, first they came for the trade unionists, and I didn't resist because I wasn't a trade unionist, right? This is the importance of that speech. They come for you slice by slice, and they will, whoever you are, they will eventually come for you. I know people who have been long-term advocates of gay rights and have campaigned for gay rights and have now found themselves on the receiving end of this because they're not queer enough. Okay? Yeah. They will come for you.
Yeah.
And this is why it's important that we defend the right. The rights, I mean, for example, the one you put up at the start, the Zionism is Nazism. I don't agree with that.
No.
Right? The man has a right to say it if he believes it's true. Right? Yep. And he should take what's coming in terms of people saying, I think you're wrong, and here's why. And they could even say, I think you're evil, and here's why.
Yeah.
Right? But nobody should be involving the police in any of this. Because we should be able to organize a discussion and debate without the state and the jackboots getting involved and deciding who's allowed to speak and who has to go to jail.
But David, it's the chilling effect as well. I happen to listen to the Scottish footballer commentator, Ali McCoist. And Ali McCoist, when this whole thing came out on the 1st or 2nd of April, I think that weekend or whatever it was, there was a game in Rangers were playing Celtic.
Although
I think there was no Celtic fans at the game. I may be mistaken in that. But anyway.
I think that's correct. I think we've got to the point where we're now segregating the fans entirely.
Yeah.
Fine, stop.
But McCoist said, David, he said that he was going to be going to the game and the law was silly on nonsense. And then within about, I thought, if I understood it rightly, within 48 hours, Ali had done a U-turn and wasn't going to the game because he's got his contracts with different TV media and stuff. And, you know, did you follow that one? Did you see that thing about Ali McCoy?
I did. I don't know the ins and outs of McCoy's contract conditions, I must admit. But he did say that he'd be one of 58,000 or something.
That's right. He did.
And every one of them would be breaking the Hate Crime Act. And then he did say he wasn't going. So I don't know the whys and wherefores, but the facts you've laid out are correct.
And the other thing is, like, back in the old days when you would have got Rangers and Celtic fans in the one ground, I can but imagine what the, let's call it, banter would have been. But now, under this legislation, potentially everyone could be reported to Police Scotland for whatever, because it's completely wide open. This is the problem. This is, you know, honestly, David, it's so bad, and I don't think people elsewhere in the UK fully understand. That's why I wanted to bring you on. They don't fully understand what I see as the strangulation of free speech and liberty in Scotland. And whenever Humza Yousaf gets booted out, probably at the general election, Labour will come in and they'll not roll it back. They will. I believe they'll continue. What do you think they'll do with it?
Well, they voted for it.
Yeah,
so, you know, yeah. So we can only believe they'll keep it. And the Green Party love it because obviously Patrick Harvey wants to prosecute people who call them names.
Yeah.
And I don't see any real push against this sort of stuff because we have to, we're not operating on the right principle to actually push back against this. To be fair to the Conservatives in Scotland, they did vote against it, right? Mm. So that was something. But they tend to be, you know, the left wing are a political movement that constantly make things worse, and the Conservatives are a political movement that constantly stop things being fixed, you know, once they've been made worse, you know. So I don't see an awful lot of hope there. Let me share one of the older hate campaigns with you, right? This was called the Dear Haters campaign. This was all over Scotland a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. Well, no, 2019, gosh, more than that, 5 years ago. They've been at this. This was the third major iteration of the anti-hate campaign in Scotland. The previous two being laughed out of court. This one was letters to hateful people. So they were appearing on things like billboards and bus stops and things. So this one reads as follows. Dear bigots.
You lost me at bigots.
Dear bigots, division seems to be what you believe in. We don't want your religious hate on our buses, on our streets, and in our communities. We don't want you spreading your intolerance or making people's lives a misery because of their religious dress. You may not have faith and respect and love, but we do. That's why if we see or hear your hate, we are reporting you. End of sermon. And a lot of people, including the wee Flea, who's a wee free minister, who's been quite prominent in the media, considered that to be anti-Christian hatred. And I think it probably is, because that's obviously the style in which it was written. You know, so I said in my speech in front of Parliament, and I was asking, you know, why are they doing this? My conclusion was because they hate our nation. I'll quote a wee bit here. Because they hate our nation, for a nation is like a family. It is a strength and compass. Differences. It understands patience and love and loyalty and duty. It inspires courage and grants dignity. It does not do this by means of imposing uniformity, nor by controlling thought or manipulating emotions or generating fear. Rather, it inspires a voluntary and loving commitment by each individual man and woman. And the point I'm making is the state cannot do this. The ideology of Humza Yousaf and of the Labour Party and Sarwar cannot do this. So instead, what they're doing is they're using coercion and threats and bullying to impose their will and their view of the world. This is that you've got to think the way they say you must think, and that's what makes it so pernicious. And I concluded with bits of advice of what we can do. And I said we must never miss an opportunity to tell the truth. We must always and everywhere reject lies. We must decide not to live in fear. And we must love one another. And and the reason I'm saying this is we have to choose a better law, because this one is appalling and must be rejected. And we can individually and collectively reject it.
I completely agree with every word that you said, David. And it was good to see that gathering on the 1st of April as well. I think people, you know, do need to get out and show their, well, I would say their absolute contempt for what's being, as you say, imposed on them. But, I mean, the Humza Yousaf himself is so egregiously racist himself, so egregiously offensive. I mean, for example, did you see that thing? Was it in Boot House where he was, was there a slaughtered sheep's head on the table? Did you see that as part of the... Was it part of the Ramadan celebration?
It was part of Ramadan. He had a multi-faith ecumenical gathering to hear the Islamic call to prayer in Butte House, or Butte Mosque, as it's being increasingly called. You know, this is, you know, people point out, one, if he'd lost the leadership election, and you had Kate Forbes, the Wee Free Church holding prayer meetings in there, there'd be uproar because this is all about, it's an anti-Christian religion that's installing itself.
Yes, it is.
Secondly, people are saying, well, this is not what Scotland is. Scotland was never Islamic. This is not who we are, which is a problem. It is a major issue. And once you look into some of the ideology of Islam, it becomes an even bigger issue to do with what happens when political control is gained. Thirdly, you've got simply the hypocrisy of Humza Yousaf himself, because he's doing all this Islamic stuff, but if you actually speak to the Muslims, they have no time for him, because everything he believes, all the pro-gay, pro-trans, all this, is totally opposed to everything that they believe from a religious point of view. So he's putting on the cloak of Islam, but even that isn't actually real. It's simply another flag of convenience. And it's all about his woke ideology, and that ultimately is all about one thing, which is power.
Yeah, I mean, he's actually like a Scottish Sadiq Khan. I see Sadiq Khan and Humza, very similar with camouflage. But I mean, well, Sadiq Khan, I think he wants power as well, but he postures. He's so incredibly pro-trans. It's unbelievable for a good Muslim boy. Yeah. So there's similarities between them, isn't there?
Oh, for sure. Yes. And they also have the same nasty, aggressive streak when challenged.
Yes. Yeah, they do. They do.
Which is very, very unattractive.
Yeah. Well, it's like I don't think they can accept criticism, David. I think that's a fundamental problem. But everything that's happening in Scotland under Humza Yousaf and previously under Sturgeon, obviously, you know, it does need to be challenged and people do need to speak up about it. And I am pleased that one thing that's become very obvious over the past couple of weeks, the Scottish sense of humour, especially online, the ability to mock, which I completely approve of. I think we've got a bit of it over here as well, has been to the fore. And that's good, because I reckon the one thing that they really, really hate is when they're mocked, when they're memed, you know, and basically we all sit around having a real good laugh at them. And we're not sitting and, oh, we're so scared we might say something that hurts somebody's feelings somewhere. We don't care. We're going to say what we want. We have to.
Yeah, the devil hates mockery.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why we need to mock all the more. Listen, David, we've got to the end of our allocated time. Didn't even get a chance to talk. I wanted to talk about the further SNP shenanigans, banning wood stoves and essentially, you know, I saw a guy, I'll finish this very quickly because I can't resist. I saw some Labour guy who runs a Scottish company who produces heat pumps. Forget his name. Anyway, he was saying all this business about from the 1st of April, any new bills, you're going to have either solar, a lot of that in Scotland, or heat pumps. He says they don't work. That must be really exciting if you live in rural Scotland and you're going to be stuck with solar on your roof and the sun's not shining, so it's not going to be very effective, or heat pumps which don't work. So that's not looking great as well, David. I'm very worried about Scotland.
Yeah, I mean, it's the electricity grid can't take the excitement that's been planned for it, because if you look at the amount of energy that's transmitted through the gas network, the electricity grid simply cannot take it. But the political decision has been that gas is bad. That's also fundamentally flawed. And then we're going to push these alternatives, all which push up the cost of housing. So it means more and more people will find it harder to get somewhere to live. Mm. We see this expanded into transport really aggressively. And we've got, I think, four cities now in Scotland that have got ultra low emission zones, right? Which is a tax on the poor, right? Because if you've got £20,000 or £30,000 to go and spend in the car, fine, you can drive into the city centre. If you don't, sorry, we don't want your sort in here. This is ridiculous. Mm. And there's no valid reason for it. You know, the problems were buses, not cars, and the problem's largely gone away. There's not an air quality problem to actually justify their technical response. It's for other reasons. And the idea that you can't have a wood-burning stove in a home, again, if you live in rural Scotland, this is patently nonsensical.
Yeah.
But it's being imposed by your Green Party politicians who have never been to rural Scotland. They much prefer wine bars in Kelvinside.
Yeah, it is a shocker, David. We could talk all night because there's so much wrong. But can I just remind everyone, please, do make sure you're following David over on his Twitter. I think we just bring it up on screen here. There we go, at Albion_Rover. This is his Substack, Digging Deeper. And there's a lot of, I like the cartoon at the top. That's a hate crime. David, as always, listen, it's such a pleasure to talk to you. Northern Exposure as well. Make sure you follow all David's platforms, because in a way, you know something, folks, what's happening in Scotland is coming to us all. It really, really is. And we can talk tonight and I can be, well, not, I'm not smug, but some people might say, well, Scotland's problem. It ain't. It's going to be all our problem. It totally is. And, you know, we see that. And that's why it's really good, I think, that people outside of Scotland can help you. David, somebody asked a question earlier. I think I know the answer, but you can give them it. Does this legislation apply retrospectively?
No.
No.
The excuse Police Scotland have given for not prosecuting Humza's hate speech, white speech, was that... it was reported previously and it was looked into then under the previous legislation and was determined not to be a crime. It will not be reassessed under the new hate speech law because it is not, it's not happened after the law came into effect. Now, a very good friend of mine has written to Murdo Fraser, Conservative MSP, himself has found himself on recorded by Police Scotland as a non-crime hate incident because of something he said. And he wasn't aware of this till he found out by accident. These are non-crime hate incidents are on your record, and if someone does an enhanced search on your name for a job for reasons of employment, they will find this, and you won't know it's there, but they'll find out that you're a nasty, bigoted person that they don't want to employ. So he started asking questions. So we've asked. Murdo if he would in Parliament ask Humza whether he stands by his white speech, and if he does, would he mind awfully repeating it in full now?
Right, let's hope he does that, and I'll put that to him. That's got to be worth another show, David, because ultimately, you know, because they're not that clever, these people at all. They're really quite low IQ. And hateful as well, and hateful with it. So it's fun when they can be exposed. I bet you he'll duck that one. There's no way. He can't answer that, can he? He just can't. It's impossible. Listen, anyway, well, I'm conscious of time. So, David, such a pleasure to talk to you. The hour and a bit's gone by too quickly, and I'm sure we could have filled another one. Thanks, everybody, for all your kind comments towards David there. And it's a bit like the two Ronnies, this, the two Davids. We rock up every now and again, and we basically laugh at the nightmare, dystopian nightmare, David, that we all face. But anyway, do make sure you follow David, support David, and give him all the help that you can, please. And that's it from us for tonight, and I'll catch you all next Monday. Actually, I've got hopefully Gregory Paul Martin, son of the late Sir George Martin, producer of the Beatles, coming on to have a chat about various matters. So I hope you'll join us next Monday night. And until then, that's it from us for tonight. Good night.